Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Online. That sounds really interesting. Might stay for that as well. So welcome along. My name's Anthony Borton. I'm an ALM trainer and consultant. Some details up. Oh, look at that. There you go, it works. I'm a Visual Studio ALM MVP. I've been a Microsoft Certified Trainer since 96. So that's been a little while. And a Microsoft Certified Professional for, well, since 93. So that goes back to exam 001. We'll play a little game. Who's done a Microsoft exam? Come on. Keep your hand up if you've done more than five. Well, really? Come on, put it right up. Five exams is great. More than 10. Keep it up. Come on. These games are easy. Not really, no one. You guys are going to tap out at 10. Ooh, you've all got lives. Okay, I lose. So that was 58 Microsoft exams ago for me. Yeah, I've got to get a life, I know that. Most recently, of course, the TFS exams and the resurrection of Microsoft Certified Solution Developer Application Lifecycle Management. That just rolls off your tongue. I do a little bit of travel. So if you look in the top right-hand corner there, you'll see what I've been up to in the last 4 years. That's a little over 1 million kilometres flown to 81 locations, helping organisations adopt ALM best practices. That's a few miles. You get to do that, I suppose. You've got to go where the work is. So what I'm going to talk about today is we'll go through just a quick overview of Microsoft's testing tools. Who's used, say, Microsoft Test Manager? Fantastic. Who's using 2013 Update 3? Update 4? All right. So we're going to talk about that, just do a little bit of a recap of what these tools are, find out where and what licenses we need for them. That'll be pretty quick just to set the scene. We're then going to move on and have a look at how we can create a test plan. And as the session title implied, we're trying to look at most of this today through the web browser. Okay, so we've had that rich client, we've had MTM for quite a while, but they've been improving and enhancing the browser-based experience for quite a while now. All right. I do a lot of training, so in a classroom it's very interactive. I'm used to people asking me questions, interrupting me, and I'd encourage you guys to do the exact same thing. Helps keep you awake too, it's an added benefit. It's a technique. We're going to have a look at the defect tracking workflow. So how we can go and raise a bug and some techniques around switching from the web-based client to the rich client. And then at the end there, I hope and expect we might have just a little bit of time there for some Q&A. But I'd like to encourage just a couple of questions along the way as well. Okay, so that's what's in store for us. Are you all in the right session? Oh, that's great interaction to start with. So you in the right session?
Yes.
That's excellent. Thank you, guys. That's appreciated. Don't walk under that. Okay, so let's do an overview of Microsoft's suite of test tools. So depending on exactly what you need to do, there'll be some different tools available to you. Firstly, if you're a generalist or a manual tester, if you want to author, execute, and manage test cases, Microsoft Test Manager and the Test Runner are the right tools for you. And I won't bother putting the browser up there. You could use the browser as well. Remember that the manual tester is still responsible for the vast majority of all testing done today. If you're a tester with coding skills for test automation, the most appropriate tool for you is going to probably be Visual Studio 2013 Premium Edition. So the Premium Edition allows you to create and maintain coded UI tests, which are our test automation options. And of course, that also comes with MTM and those tools as well. And then at the very top there, for a tester with specialized knowledge, there's Visual Studio 2013 Ultimate Edition. Now that Ultimate Edition gives you everything you need for, well, pretty much all testing. But the big one there is going to be web performance and load testing. So a specialist experience up there. So this is a horrible slide, which is bad because I wrote it. This shows the three different editions of Visual Studio. And, oh, hey, this is bad. So normally I'll use a bit of Zoom It magic and jump in there and draw circles around things, but the computer's buried back there now. We didn't think of that when we built these little towers in front of us. All right, so what we can see there is, I'll just call out around about the middle. So in the middle there, you've got Visual Studio Premium Edition. So that gives you all of the features and tools, you know, for a developer. But if you look over there towards the right-hand side, that's also where we pick up the testing capability. So anyone with Visual Studio Premium also gets Microsoft Test Manager and the ability to write and edit coded UI tests. And you go one step up to the top, and amongst other things, you see web testing and load testing in the top corner. So I just want to let you know where these testing capabilities reside in the product suite. There's also Visual Studio Test Professional. This is a really interesting little license. Even though the name is Visual Studio Test Professional, and clearly it's targeted at testers with that name, it's also quite a useful product SKU for our product owners, or for the traditional roles of a business analyst or a project manager. You know, people that want some of the extra features and capabilities here, but will not do any coding. So there's certainly some nice capabilities in that particular product. Okay? And that's about all I wanted to do for each of the different licenses, just to let you know where those tools are. So how's Microsoft doing in the QA arena? They just released Gartner Magic Quadrant for Integrated Software Quality Suites. That's a nice short title as well. Shows where Microsoft is. And let me reach over here. I don't have to interact with the slides too much, which is really good news. Okay, that's not on the screen I need it to be on. Fortunately, I've only got one slide quite like this. And if I do to the left, no, to the right, there we go. Yeah, I really could have organized that better. Open that up. And go way past it. And come back up again. This could take just a minute or two. All right, I don't know how much you're going to be able to see from the back there. So this is the Magic Quadrant for Software Suites. Now, it only was released last month, so it's very, very current. The main thing I want to draw your attention to is the leaders in the top right-hand quadrant. What you'll see in the top right, the furthermost one, is going to be your IBM tool suite. The next one, slightly down to the left of that, is HP. And then above that, a little bit further up there, is your Microsoft tools. So based on, and you can read a lot more about that, I mean, it's very, very recent information available from Gartner. But what you can see there is Microsoft's got a very strong offering. The detractors, or I suppose the negative points up there, are really weaknesses in cross-platform. So, I mean, some of the tools have strengths mostly focused around a Windows stack with .NET applications, you know, with Internet Explorer and the like. So take that out of the picture, and the Microsoft testing tools are certainly well-positioned in the top right-hand quadrant there. And that's quite a good improvement over where they were just a year ago. So that's good news, and as I say, fortunately, we only have to see one slide with me leaning over quite like that. And gone. All right. So much of the talk is going to be demonstrations. So one of the things I want to enable you to do is to be able to go back to work after the conference and be able to, what have we got Thursday? Next week. Go back to work next week and be able to start using some of these testing tools. So we're going to go through and create a test plan from scratch. I've got a very, very, very simple application there. I don't want to, you know, be distracted by the application that we're using, but rather I want you to really focus on what we're doing. We're going to go and create a test plan. We'll create some test suites. Then we're going to look at some of the new tools. With the increased release cadence of Microsoft software, it's getting ever harder to keep up with some of these changes. So if you have a look back to 2008, 2010, 2012. These were generally a major release, a year later a service pack, a year later a major release. And as a release cadence, that know, that was fine. That gave them a little bit of time between shipping. Many of us may work in environments where that's been the case for our in-house developed applications. We've done major releases annually, maybe biannually. That's changing. It's changed. Let's use that almost deliberately in the past tense there. So Microsoft now ship, how often for on-premises? Every quarter. This interaction isn't going very well, is it? How often do they release to Visual Studio Online? 3 weeks. Excellent. You're getting the hang of this now, guys. So with that sort of release cadence, it makes it really, really interesting, A, being a presenter, B, maintaining courseware. Every time they do a release, you go through every slide to see what's changed. That's a little bit of work for you. But moving from that, what's a test plan? So the Wikipedia definition there, a test plan is a document detailing a systematic approach to testing a system such as a machine or software. The plan typically contains a detailed understanding of the eventual workflow. That sounds okay, I guess. In Microsoft Test Manager, a test plan lets you specify what you want to test and how to run those tests. They're normally applied to a specific iteration. So if your iteration is a typical Scrum iteration of 2, 3, or 4 weeks, your test plans don't last very long. Test plans historically have been potentially 6 months worth of testing effort or potentially longer. So now if we're in a 2-week sprint, our test plans last 2 weeks. So for traditional testers who have sometimes had weeks to come up and develop that plan, this is quite a change. Now, they're not exactly the same, but they're close. A test plan in Microsoft Visual Studio Online or Team Foundation Server comprises the following items, which we'll have a look at: test cases, test suites, test configurations. I don't know if I've been completely consistent looking through the slides. Where you see Visual Studio Online or Team Foundation Server, let's treat those right now as being identical. Okay, if there is something that is unique to one or the other, I'll call that out separately. So a test case is a series of steps that a manual tester will execute to test a specific scenario. Okay, that's really simple stuff. They can include attachments, test data, expected results. What tools have we used to write test cases so far? Well, traditionally, we could have just used Word or we could have used Excel. And there's just a series of steps. Open the browser, navigate to this URL, click a button. Test suites, simply group those together into convenient groupings based on the requirements that they test or based on anything else. If that was Windows Update, I'm going to be really unhappy. Okay. We're okay. And we can also create a criteria, a query that any test cases that match the criteria you define will automatically appear in that particular suite. Our test configurations, well, that just tells us what browsers, what operating systems and so forth we're going to be testing. Finally, you wrap all those things up, give it an assigned build, a date range usually, and then some test settings, and there's a test plan. Since update 3, a test plan has been a work item in TFS. The biggest advantage of that is now going to be the significantly easier customization capabilities there, something that we've really been, you know, missing since the release of the product in 2010. The release of the testing capabilities in 2010. So in update 3, test cases have always been work items, but test plans and test suites are now work items. So that's a good thing. Who's been waiting for that? Anyone? That ability to do that customization to them, have more custom states for them, store extra information. So that's a big win for many teams. All right, I think it's time to go and create one of these things. Try that again. It's not number 2. Where's my AV person? the red one. Hey, it was user error. Who's not surprised by that? All right, so out of curiosity, what you're looking at there is the view from the view of Seattle from a friend's house. That's a very recent photo. What I'm going to do is pop into the project portal. And again, as I said, this is just FabricM Fiber, so a very, very simple application. And he just goes and quickly wakes up. Great. So I've got virtually no data there. I've got a little bit of source control, source code in the version control system. I think I've created one requirement-based work item, but that's it. So I want to show you basically everything just from getting started. So I'll go into the test option over here. And the first thing it says is you need a test plan. So, of course, all of the testing tools have been test plan-centric since the release of the product. I'll go ahead and say I want to create a test plan. And if you've used MTM, that's going to be quite familiar to you. So I've got to give it a name. Now, the most logical name there is going to be a name corresponding to the name of the iteration. So this is our test plan that corresponds to the deliverables that the team are going to work on delivering during iteration one. I'll go ahead and create that. Even that has only, you know, that was only added in 2013. Prior to 2013, to create that test plan, you had to go and use the rich client. Then you could switch back to the web client to do this. So they're definitely working at increasing the capabilities of that web client to bring it more on par with the rich client. Now, I didn't say make it equal, and I don't know that it can ever quite be equal yet, but certainly it's getting better. So I've created that test plan. There are certain things there that we still can't do. So going in there and specifying some of those properties are not available to us yet. When we move across into update 3, and I don't know if there's much in update 4 going to change this, there's still a few things you're going to want to go back to the rich client for. That was a very quick, short one. So having a look at that one, our test suites. So as I said, test suites simply group test cases together. It can be a requirements-based suite, it can be a static suite, or a query-based suite. I shouldn't have bothered with that slide. Let's go straight back over here. So I can go over here and say that I want to go and create a new static suite. So this will be my end-to-end tests. I can also go and say that I'd like to create a requirements-based suite. And requirements-based suites are the most common types of test suites that we use in MTM. So I'll go ahead and run the query, and that will list all of the requirements that are currently in this team project for the iteration. So I'm going to go ahead and select that one and say create that suite. So now any test cases that I add into this suite will automatically be then linked back to the requirement. And that's giving us that really critically important bidirectional traceability. Okay, so from the requirement, here's the test plan that links to it, the test suite, and all of the test cases inside that. We get that nice flow through back to find out exactly what test cases test the requirement. And then the final one that we can create is I go in there and say a query-based suite, and now I've simply got to come up with the filter, the criteria for any test cases that I want to appear here. Okay, so this could be who the test is assigned to, who created the test case. It could be any of the categories or properties of the test case. So I simply define that, and I might say that I'm looking for and created by is equal to me. Okay, so a very, very straightforward one, and isn't that a really bad name? And I'll say it tests created by Anthony. So the three types of suites that we can create. Okay. Any questions about those three suites? Nope, fairly straightforward. All right. So what is a manual test? The majority of testing today is done manually by human testers. It's a series of steps often written in Word or Excel today, and a tester will sit there and basically work their way through those steps, ticking off each of the steps as we go. In TFS, a test case is a work item. When we enter our test steps, the granularity is determined by the person entering those steps in there. As guidance that I normally offer, I say that as a guide, the steps should be sufficiently granular and detailed to allow an outside tester with no knowledge of the application under the test to complete the steps correctly. Okay? I don't know that, you know, I'm sure some of you have a better, clearer definition than that, but that really is just to provide some guidance around, you know, how granular those steps should be. As far as expected results go, this is a little bit more contentious. Certainly in delivering training in this product for the last few years, there's a lot of people that believe every test step should have an expected result. Who are those people? There's going to be some. There's going to be a few. No, none. No one's feeling that way inclined. All right, so with MTM, we'll change that a little bit. We'll say that we're going to put an expected result only on those steps that specifically have to pass in order for the test to pass. It's a little bit different, and that gives us the advantage of being able to do things like test case fast forward. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and create a test case. It's a simple test case where we're going to create a new service ticket. Okay, so switch over so you can see it. So I'm going to go in and have a look at my requirement. We'll look at the requirement and say service tickets should be able to be created through the Fabric-M fibre intranet application, and they should include the following information. So I can see the details of the requirement, although that's a very, very basic requirement. I'll jump out of there and say that I'd like to create a new test case. So this particular test case is create new service ticket. And then we'll just go ahead and create the steps. So while we do this, let's have the application open. Okay, so there's Fabric-M Fibre. It's, you know, fraught with danger. Half the buttons cause exceptions and errors, and that is deliberate. I'm just going to try not to tread on any of those today. Okay, so I'm going to say open that URL. Click on create new. And it's only a short test case. So we've got title, let's enter, what's the service ticket? Investigate missing cable channels. As title, I'm going to leave the typos there, it makes it look more realistic. Set the escalation to level 2 and enter customer reports some premium channels are missing. Okay, so if we go back across to the application there, we'd enter those couple of things in, and I'll go ahead and say click create. Click create. Now I'll have an expected result there, so the new service ticket is created, and then to be nice and stateless, we'll go ahead and close the browser. Now, I'm not going to get any awards or any points there from the testers in the room for what is academically not a particularly great test case, but it's easy to understand and it didn't require too much more typing. Okay, so I've created that new test case there. You'll see that it's currently showing a state of active. If I go and have a look at the requirement now, in terms of traceability, you'll see that without that requirement, I can go and click on test cases, and by putting it into that particular requirements-based test suite, you'll see that the links are automatically put in place for me. Okay, so I'll get back out of there now. And I've created that test case. For many people out there, you're unable to install software on the machines where you're doing your testing. Having MTM, or Microsoft Test Manager, available for us for a while, it's been good. It's a great, rich client. Some of the information we can get while we're going in and recording our action recordings, the bugs that we can raise, they're all fantastic. But what about those people that cannot load software onto the machine where they're testing for fear that perhaps it would influence the result of the test case? Or what if there's not a client for that particular operating system? You know, Microsoft Test Manager is great if you're installing on Windows. Not so good if you're installing anywhere else. So having a web-based test runner is actually a good thing. Now remember, it can only do what you're allowed to do inside a browser. Fortunately for all of us, that's not as much as what you can do with a rich client. So we lose things. We can't do a test case fast forward. When we go and raise a bug, we don't get to include things like the event logs and IntelliTrace information. And you've got to be grateful for that. Could you imagine if code running inside a browser could get that hardware access on a machine? The opportunity for malware there would be enormous. So the web-based test runner is just that. It sits up in a browser. Who's used the web-based runner? A few people? Great. Okay. So that was about 5% of the room. So the web test-based runner, I mean, it's lightweight. If you go at it and expect it to behave and do the same thing that the rich runner does, you'll be disappointed. Okay? But as a lightweight, I'll say clientless. Okay, it's a browser client. I'll take that on the chin. It can certainly do some work for us. So let's go ahead and see executing that test case. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and say that I'd like to run that test case. And before I do so, I'll just close the other browser and run. Now, one of the first things, if you're familiar with the rich runner will dock to the left-hand side of the screen and redraw the desktop and every other window so that the test runner is not obscuring anything. Now, we can't do that within the browser. So the browser now is, you know, not moving things around for us. So step one, go ahead and open that URL. Okay, so that was straightforward. Pretty happy with that. Click the Create button. All right. Investigate. At least I'm consistent with that bad typing. Missing cable channels. We'll change the escalation to level 2. Customer reports. I'm bored with typing. We'll go ahead and click Create down the bottom. And an expected result there, the new service ticket's created. One of the things that I really do like about this runner that's not available, you know, we were thinking it's very one-sided. Now, the rich runner gets all the love. There is something in here that you can't do in the rich runner. And that is go and edit these steps. So if I wanted to go in here and change my typing there, I can go and fix the typo. Or make another one. That's also a very valid option, I guess. So as we go through, particularly for features that are under development that the team are working on, if the UI changes and that's not reported to the tester doesn't proactively go in there and make the change, I can update that test case as I'm running it. Okay, so that's nice for those test cases, not the regression test, but certainly more the ones that focus or target the work that the team's working to deliver in this particular iteration. So, you know, a tick in the box for that one. The test case itself. So in this particular case, work item, I didn't see what number it was, work item 2 or whatever it might have been. What's another question? Yes. Okay, so edit. There you go. So move up and down, delete, put shared steps in there and so on, down the front. I do not believe so, but I've never tried that. So just to repeat the question there, are we able to have multiple expected results for a particular step or an expected result without a corresponding step? Is that correct? Yeah, it's not quite the same thing. So I can certainly put a step in there that doesn't have an expected result. I don't know how that would play out going past that. I don't know if that would be particularly smooth. put it on a single line, yeah. It's a complete fail, you're right. Yeah, I mean, you can make it work, but it's not completely smooth and easy the way that you would maybe hope. Yeah. There was, I thought, one other question. I've got time for one more. Yes. Yes. So as a work item, you've got that history no matter what happens and changes there, so that's good news. Okay. Well, do you misbehave a lot at work? All right, so I've gone and done that test. I'll mark that as a fail because I wasn't paying attention, but a fail's okay. We can have a fail. All right, so data binding. Manual testing by nature is manual and also very, very repetitive. So we'd go through there and we might be able to create a service ticket in this example, you know, with certain text at the top. Maybe there is no description, or maybe it's a short description, a long description. Maybe there's a combination there that isn't quite working. So remember, when we're looking at our manual tests, it's highly probable we'll go through that repeatedly. So data binding is really, really useful, and they've made some nice little changes in this area. So let's have a look at that. Click on the right device. So I'm going to go ahead and edit that particular test case. And we're going to do some data binding. I'll go ahead and remove that step. So up here, when I say enter, investigate the missing cable channels, let's get rid of that. And I'm simply going to put the little at symbol there that we've done for quite a while. So I'll go ahead and say at title. When I press enter, that'll become a column heading down the bottom for our grid of test data. That's not new. We've had that since 2010, but the support for it in the browser was a more recent addition. I'll go ahead and pop that text in while it's in the clipboard. Set the escalation level to level 2, and I'll make that a parameter. And that'll be level 2. And then we'll grab this text here, chop that out. And I'll say at description. My typing is normally better. You're not going to believe me. I know that already. All right. So I've managed to data bind that. And I can go down here and put in a second one. So investigate explosion of set top box. That's a little bit more exciting, isn't it? Better give that a higher priority. Customer says it blew up. We get good customers at Fabricam Fiber. So I'll go ahead and save and close that. And like any data-bound test case that we've had in the past, if I was to choose to go ahead and run that now, you'll see up here that I've got two iterations, so two rows of sample data. So I want to run through this particular test case twice. The first time through, it'll grab values from the first row and so forth, as you'd expect. So I can go here, it'll say, I don't know, you need to see me. Oh, yes, you do. We'll open it up. And it takes a lot of getting used to if you're used to the traditional test runner, where you just paste that in from the data-bound parameters. That takes a bit of getting used to. Guys, you don't need to see me do that typing, so I'll take some shortcuts. I can go ahead and click Create there. I can close the browser. That particular test case, we'll go ahead and say Next. And now it's picked up the second row of data there. Okay, so again, you've got that very consistent experience, even through the browser now at the back. Yes. No. So the particular feature or capability that you're asking about is something that's only available to us in the rich client. So if we were using the rich test runner right now, the first time through, it would learn the control in my application. It would learn where that data's going to go. So on the second time through, it could automatically unpopulate those. It also puts the sample data into the clipboard buffer for me. Okay, but these are not things that we can do with the web-based test runner. And you really miss it. Okay, I'll definitely concede that point. All right, so, and imagine we go through it the second time now, and I'll say that's a pass. I'll do a little cheating there. And we'll save and close that. So data binding, I didn't mean to close that. So going and data binding through the web browser is actually a very straightforward thing for us as well, although we don't get quite the same experience that we get through the rich client. So shared parameters. Shared parameters are fantastic. Who's used shared parameters? Were you so excited when they finally arrived? Thank you. A little yep's really appreciated. So shared parameters I've been asking for since the release in 2010. And I guess the unofficial attitude has always been, oh, but if you want to do that, just go to coded UI. It's like, but no, I don't want to make it automated. I want it to remain a manual test with shared data. So for those of you that haven't got that experience, let me tell you the pain point that I'm referring to. So a moment ago, you saw me in a test case bind some parameters, go down the bottom, and I went and put each of the values into that test case. Now imagine I want to use that same data across 10 more manual tests. Up until recently, your only choice? Copy-paste, copy-paste, copy-paste. So imagine there's 20 rows of data there. New customer data, so names, addresses, phone numbers, whatever other details that you want to include. We use 20 different customers, and I use that, let's say, in 10 test cases out of 100. And then we realize that we haven't been testing for a long hyphenated surname, and that seems to cause some problems with the application. What have you got to do? Well, you've got to go and find the 10 that use that data by opening them up, having a look down there, and maintaining it in each of those individual locations. Yeah, that sounds horrible when you say it aloud, and it's horrible when you're trying to do it. So shared parameters make that a thing of the past. It's a new work item type. Okay, so again, the full auditability and traceability that comes with being a work item. So now we can grab that sample data, put it into a separate work item, and have as many test cases as you like refer to it. Okay, so great. One single central location to enter and maintain that test data with some good versatility and flexibility around the reusability of that data. Let me stop talking about it and give you a look at what that looks like. So I'm going to go back to that test case, which I nice and conveniently closed. We'll open that test case. And you'll see down the bottom here an option to convert that to shared parameters. Okay, now this is also available through the rich client. So I'll say, yes, convert that to shared parameters. Now I get to name it. So think of this as the title of a work item. And I'll say that this is going to be a new ticket sample data. And we'll go ahead and create that. Now you'll see there are a couple of little changes down the bottom here. I'll go ahead and save and close that. I'll go back to Visual Studio just for a moment, just to show you that these are work items. Or maybe I won't. But we'll jump over here and I'll say create a new query. And if I say that the work item type is equal to, and shared parameter exists there. I'll give that a quick run. And get rid of that little window, which is there to make me panic. And sure enough, there it is as a work item type directly from within the Visual Studio client. Okay, so, I mean, making these things work items is a huge... Work items is great in terms of that auditability and traceability. I'll jump back out of that client because the client didn't like me. Pop back over here, and I can maintain these separately. So if I go up the top and click on parameters, I can get a list of all of those shared parameter sets. I can go in there and add an extra one. And we're going to give that an escalation level of 3 and some more text over here and go back and change one that's already there. Nice and easily. Please go ahead. Excellent. So that's a great question. So in terms of capitalizing or maximizing our ability to reuse these, what if I didn't want to reuse all 3 values there in the next test case? And that's a great question. So I'll go ahead and jump out of here on the way. I'm going to click on properties, and again, you can just see it there as that work item type. I'll go and say that I want to create a new test case. And in this test case, I should really type something meaningful, but you don't want to watch me type. That would probably be normal for me anyway. Here I'm going to say enter at title, and then we'll close the browser. Okay, so just using one of those three fields from the shared parameters. Is that what you're looking for? So when I come down the bottom here and say that I would like to add a shared parameter set, it gives me a list of the shared parameter sets that are available. I'll choose the one that I want and say OK. And then if you have a look down the bottom, here's the title, and then I meant to use a different label there, actually. It doesn't have to match the same label. So I did say title, but I'm saying that from the shared parameter set, I want it to map this field into this column, and that's exactly what you see. So no, you don't have to use all of those rows. Okay? So I'll go ahead and save and close that. So we've certainly been able to reuse those in quite a versatile way. Yes, sir? Excellent question. So to repeat the question, are those new capabilities, those new work item types, only available in certain process templates? Yes. The three out of the box. So more to the point, for example, what are you using at the moment? MSF for Agile Software Development is the one you're using? So basically, and it's a 2013 version? Oh, 2010. So your best advice, I think you're going to know what that is, when you upgrade to these newer types, the Feature Enablement Wizard will add these capabilities into those process templates for you. But before you worry about that, you've got other bigger things to do. Question over there. Why would you want to know that? Excellent. So if we were to go over here, have a look at our parameters, open up the properties, and to repeat the question, slightly paraphrased. So are we able to go in there and find out what test cases are using those particular parameter sets? So that if we were to go and make some half-hearted changes there, we want to know what we break. Okay, slight paraphrasing. So I can go in here and say, click on reference to test cases. And that's exactly what it does. So this particular shared parameter set is used by the two that are listed up there. So we do have that traceability. Okay. That's a good feature. Shared parameters are fantastic for those people that have been stuck doing manual tests for a while, which is most people. Okay, so approvals. This is another new feature that's been added post-2013 release. So who has had the requirement to maybe get their test cases, to export them, to send them to stakeholders, to keep a particular version of them for audit and compliance requirements? Every now and again, I'll get, either through a blog or through a training course, how do I export my test cases? Well, why would you want to do that? I've got to be able to send them, you know, to someone that doesn't have direct access to TFS. Who's used TestScribe, that little free download utility? Excellent. No one. Good, we don't need it anymore. That's the actual good news. So for those of you that have never used it, don't start now, I guess is the point that I'm going to make there. All right, so let's have a quick look at what that one looks like. Okay, so if I go back here to my test plan, it's this tiny little button just hidden up here. I'll wiggle the mouse so you can see where it is. I can go up here and say, yes, I would like to email or print my test artifacts. Now, it's certainly a lot more advanced than the test scribe that none of you used. So what I can do in here is say that, you know, how much of the test plan would you like? Would you like the test plan, the properties, the suite hierarchy, configurations, run settings? You can have it all. We can go down here and say selected suites only, or give me all suites. And would you like to see the test cases with steps, parameters, links, attachments, associated automation? Your choice entirely. So I can go in here and then email that off. Or in this example, I'll say I wish to print it. And you can modify the XSL to change the format of this if you really, really wanted to do that, to preempt what's a common question now. I want to demonstrate that. So I'll just write that out as an XPS because there's nothing else installed in my VM. And you can see I'm going to use that one later. You'll also see that almost all of those artifacts up there are hyperlinked. So if I was to email this off to someone that did have access to my TFS server or Visual Studio Online, if they can click those hyperlinks, they can drill in and find out more about those artifacts as well. So again, a little thing, but again, one of those little rough edges that we wanted smoothed out for quite a while. Okay, so if you needed to do it, that's a big win for what is otherwise not exactly an amazing capability. So how do we deal with existing manual tests? Another very common requirement is that we do have a lot of test cases that are in Excel or test cases that are in Word. How do we import them? So there are, on CodePlex and other places, little utilities that profess to do this. Has anyone used any of them? And how'd you go? Didn't work. Yeah. They can work. Well, see, 2010, you've already got other issues. Some of those import tools are okay, but it just concerns me. Particularly for a lot of my customers are small shops. They have, 20, 30, 50 sort of test cases, and they're going to not spend a couple of days trying to get this utility to work. When it's those sorts of numbers, it's going to be just quicker and easier just to put on some good music and copy-paste for an hour. It's not going to sound very exciting, but I'm actually a little serious with that. Using some of these third-party, freeware-type, unsupported tools to play with our work item tracking database makes me nervous just a little bit. Copy-paste might take longer for smaller numbers, but you know what? You get to see and validate everything that happens there, and you click save when you're happy with it. So I'm a bit more of a fan of doing it that way. So I want to show you the grid style interface. The grid style interface is great for that copy-paste, but also for allowing testers to work in an environment that maybe they're already quite familiar with. Remember, the two most commonly used tools for manual testing today are still going to be just Word and Excel. Okay, just here's the sequence of steps to follow, and away we go. So if we have a look at those test cases that you see on the screen there, I'm just going to change the view. I'm going to change that view from the list view to the new grid view. Okay, it's a simple thing. In the grid view, I can go down here and say, test the deletion of service tickets. And then I can simply type in my test steps, my expected results, close the browser. Here's the next test case. Here are the steps there. And when I'm ready, I can go ahead and save it. And to the left-hand side of those lines, watch as I click save. 6 and 5. So these were test cases that have just been created. I can switch from the grid view back to the normal list view, and here are those two new test cases. So in terms of migration of smaller numbers of manual tests, it'd be quite reasonable to switch back to the grid view, go ahead and open an existing test case in whatever format that might be, pop into our grid view, and I can go ahead and paste those steps straight in. Migrated test case. Here's my expected result down the bottom here. Go ahead and save that. And that's just created the test case for me. Okay, so again, not an earth-shattering thing, but for someone using these tools quite regularly, that grid view is actually very, very well received and very nice. It is also something that is exclusively today available to us through the web-based client. Okay, so there is no equivalent of this in MTM today. Okay? And it's so nice to be able to say it that way, because almost everything goes the other way. Okay, any questions about the grid view? Sir? Okay, so cross-browser challenges with it? I hadn't heard that. So I in Chrome, but not Firefox. And on the machine, actually, no, I can't show up there. So I've got Chrome on there as well. So I've definitely seen those two. I just haven't tried Firefox. So interesting to hear that that is not supported, or doesn't work is more the point. Interesting in a, that's a shame sort of way. Can you put the parameters on the grid view? That's an excellent question that I can't remember the answer to. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to try. So save the... Is that back up? Yep. Let's have a look there. Save the at change. Didn't seem to break anything. So I can mention it there. Let's go ahead and save it. I won't be able to put the parameters there as my guess, and yeah, it's, we're not going to see it at the bottom. If I switch back over to the other view and go into number 7 there, have we got... So we can put them in, absolutely. We've just got to go back to this interface to go and do that. So we both just learned something. There was one more question? Yes, sir. Oh, can you put images in? There has been improvements in the support of embedded images, but exactly which places you can drop those in and which you can't, I'm not familiar with. I haven't played enough around with it. So improved support there, I can't tell you the specifics. So that's, you know, much better support for embedded images and those sorts of things. Have you tried putting any of those things into this view, I think was your question? I wouldn't think so either. So thanks for sharing that. Okay, let's get back out of there. So let's have a look at the defect tracking workflow. So this one I want to spend a little bit more time with. So if the runner, the lightweight web-based runner, isn't as feature-rich, if it can't get access to the hardware the same way that the normal runner can, what does the defect tracking workflow look like? Okay, so that'll just take, that'll be just a couple of minutes, so let's have a look at it. I'm going to go and choose one of these test cases, and I'm going to choose to run it. So I'm going to go ahead and run that in the web-based runner. Okay, we'll go to that URL. Switch. Thank you. Almost got to the end without forgetting the switch. All right, so all I've done is say that I wanted to start the lightweight test runner there. I've opened up the browser and I'm happy with that. I'll click create, happy with that. And let's say that there's suddenly a bug as I try and type something into the title. So I'm going to go ahead and fail that step. It's asking me for a comment there. Cannot enter the title text. Now for those people that have used the rich runner before, I could go and capture screenshots and do a lot of work with that. Right now, I could take a screenshot using Windows, save that as a file, copy, paste, or attach the file. It's a workaround. You know, nowhere near the nice experience that we get with the rich runner, but that's okay. So I've created the bug, and let's pretend for a minute that we whiz through the rest there, and I'm going to create that bug. I'll say, what was it? Title field cannot be edited, and for the moment I'm just going to assign that back to myself. So I'll save it and close it. So for those of you that haven't used the rich test runner, if you use MTM and the rich runner, raising that bug gives you a lot of information available through the diagnostic data collectors. We can get things like information from the event logs. We can capture screen information in there. We can get IntelliTrace information. You know, we can create these really information-rich bugs that, you know, developers will love to see, with a goal of making it easier for the developer just to get in there and find and fix the bug quicker. So I've gone ahead and created that bug here. I'm just going to save that now. And I'm going to go back and rerun it. This time, I'm going to choose to run using the rich client. Okay? So this one does require that you have MTM installed on your machine. So now it's going to open up MTM, get that test case for us, automatically start the rich test runner, and now it's docked over to the left-hand side. I'll go ahead and say that I want to run that test. So it wants to go ahead and open the browser, so I'll do that. I'll navigate to Fabricam, click the Create button, and this time, you know, when it doesn't work, I've got a lot more capabilities here. I'm going to go and say that this step is a fail. I'm going to choose to go and attach a screenshot to it. Not exactly a useful screenshot, but a screenshot nonetheless there. I'll put some comments in there. The title field is grayed out. And of course, with the other diagnostic adapters that I've got there, I didn't modify the default settings there, but it could have been capturing video for us and any of the other examples that I gave you earlier. Now, instead of going and creating the bug, I'm going to choose to go and update the existing bug. I'll go and select a query here that says my bugs. I'll find the bug that I raised a minute ago and click on add. And that's gone and now added all of that rich information into the existing bug. I'll go ahead, that's assigned to me, I'll give it a priority and a severity. I'll save and close that bug and just dive back out of here for now. So that particular bug that I've assigned off to the developer now has evidence that I've run through it twice, which is also really, really useful. Now, as a QA person, you think you found a bug, the first thing you do is try to repro it. Over the years of teaching both developer courses and tester courses, it's 100% batting average at the moment. Developers, you think you found a bug, what do? Raise the bug. And you ask testers, you think you found a bug, what do? And they will always answer, try and reproduce it. I've never had that not be answered that way, which is funny because developers are the ones that complain if you can't repro it. That's all right. So in that particular test case, sorry, in the bug now, we've got the evidence of it being run once, and then we ran it the second time, easily using the rich client. As I said, it did need to be installed though. And then I've updated that bug with far more rich information. My developer, who's nervous about opening Visual Studio again, for the same reason that he was before, which is very new and interesting, he's going to go in here and say, look at my work items. He's going to see that there's a bug assigned to him. He'll open up that bug and find out all of this rich information, and there is the detail of it being run twice. Here's the action log, the system information, and the defaults there were basically, you know, some very minimalistic data collections. What we'll do here is pretend that the developer goes, checks the source out, makes the changes, checks it in the build files, we get it out to the tester again. So for now, I'm going to say that I've managed to resolve that particular bug. So I'll go ahead and save it. We'll then switch back to MTM. And part of the responsibility of QA is not just to run the tests and raise the bugs, but also to validate the proposed fixes. So to prove this, QA will go and have a look and we'll see that whether these are bugs that were created by me or assigned to me, you'll see here that it's now been marked as resolved. So how do we prove or disprove that resolution? Well, I'll go up here and say I want to verify it. And of course, we simply rerun the same test again to test and evaluate what the developer's done. I'll start that test. And you don't want to watch me run through those steps, so I'm going to cheat and say that it's a pass. So let's say that we've gone through, we've verified those steps, and we're happy with what the developer has done. I'll mark that as a pass, save and close it, and look at what it's suggesting for me. It's saying you've gone through a verification process, you've rerun those steps, this time they're a pass, so it's recommending or suggesting to me that I go in and change the state of that particular bug to closed. And I can say, yep, all happy with it. Or if I was unhappy, I could reactivate the bug, send it back to the developer with more information as to why this hasn't fixed the bug that I reported. Okay, so that's your defect workflow, tying the rich web-based test runner across into, sorry, the lightweight runner back across to the rich MTM experience. So I'll go ahead and say that I want to close that, save and close that one, and we've managed to create that bug and verify it. So there are a number of other features and capabilities there, including the test case fast forward. So test case fast forward is not something that we get access to through the lightweight web runner. Okay, test case fast forward, for those of you that haven't used it in MTM, allows you to go through, it records your actions, including the data binding, so that when we go back to run it again, we can highlight some steps and say play, and it will do it for us. That's a huge time saver for our manual testers. Exploratory testing is also something that works incredibly well with the rich client. Okay? Exploratory testing is difficult because it's challenging to record all of the things you did to be able to repro a bug if you find it. So using the rich runner, that gets all recorded for us. We don't have that capability in the browser. And the other thing at the moment, and I think this may have changed with update 3, is we may not have access to those test settings, although I think update 3 does give us access to the test settings through the browser. I can't prove or disprove that just for this minute. So to recap, Microsoft has made some big improvements. And when I say big, I don't mean large in scope. These are the paper cuts that I think have been largely addressed through more recent updates, giving us that rich test runner through things like the shared parameter sets that you saw, being able to switch between the lightweight client and the rich client quickly and easily has been a big win there for us. In creating the test plan, you saw that I was able to do virtually everything using just that web-based experience. And I've demonstrated to you the defect tracking workflow as we can move from the lightweight client through to the rich client, raise the bug, update the bug with more rich information, and then verify it and close it out. So I've got, I think, about 57 seconds left for questions. So any questions on anything that you've seen there today? Excellent. You got your questions out of your system during the presentation. Well, thanks a lot for coming along, and hopefully you've seen a little bit about the web-based test case management in TFS. Have a good afternoon.